don't have to have an S on your chest. But you darn sure got to be able to represent that T on your helmet.
Live from the studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, this is The Blitz with Rick Butler, Chance Collins, and Brandon Orrick.
And welcome to the Blitz today, live on Fan Run Radio, Fox Sports Knoxville. Hope everyone out there is having a fantastic start to their morning. Today is Monday, February 17th, bright and early in the morning. It is 10 a.m. sharp here, and we are we're ready for the Blitz. Good to be back. A little hiatus right there, gentlemen. I have returned bearing gifts for you guys.
You have gifts?
I have gifts.
I don't see anything.
Yeah, I didn't see anything either.
That is because the gift...
It's intangible?
It actually...
I hate intangible items.
It is intangible. That is true. You don't like... Like, what if it was an experience? What if, like, I was taking you to a roller coaster?
That's still, like...
It's tangible.
Yeah, it's tangible. I can feel the experience.
Yeah.
I'm in the rush of being on a roller coaster.
I guess that's true.
Just what'd you get us?
The coronavirus. Aha! I was at the airports all weekend, traveling around.
You were at the airport the entire weekend.
No, not the entire weekend, Brandon. But
you did say all weekend.
Spent a long time in the airports, so.
So you missed the show on Thursday and Friday to sit in the airport.
No, I mean I
no,
didn't.
He
just,
said, no, he said
I had
airports.
A test.
No, so, like, I had he said a, in multiple airports.
That is
just
true.
Around.
Yeah,
hey,
he
true.
Didn't say airport. Multiple airports.
It's true. Multiple. I was in multiple airports. Had to take a layover flight. Multiple airports. Three, in fact.
If you had the coronavirus, you wouldn't be sitting here.
It's true.
This was a real concern of mine, right? Traveling out through
Why?
The airports. I was at...
You weren't traveling to Wuhan.
It doesn't matter. It's still
it does.
A,
no.
What
it,
is
it
the,
actually,
no, 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 no.
It actually
no.
kind of does matter.
What is
matter.
The classification for this emergency right now? Like, what is the... What DEFCON level are we on?
I mean, I don't know if it's DEFCON, but I mean, they've got travel bans. I mean, no one is traveling in or out of China. I mean, it's not like, I mean, everybody that's got it is quarantined.
Right, but there is like a there is a notion out about
we're not
this
like,
disease right now.
We're
right,
not like, they, we're not like on orange level threat or anything. This is
I
mean, not
you
considered.
You guys are pumping sunshine into this. All right, we have a
this
medical
is not considered
catastrophe
bio,
happening
it's not
right
bio
now.
Warfare yet.
Like, that basically is the second coming of the bubonic plague, and I was in the heart of it this weekend. I was fighting the battle.
Rick, you know
against
that
germs.
The flu kills more people than the coronavirus each year.
Well, that's because the coronavirus just started, Brandon.
Well, that's what all these people
Golly.
Want to tell you not to freak
Golly,
out.
Boy.
I'm just letting you know.
Anyways, I took my precautions, had my Purell, had my Germex, staying healthy throughout the travel. So I'm back feeling better than I did when I left. How about that? How about that?
How about that?
Came back re-energized. Much like... the All-Star game last night. Let's talk about something that came back re-energized. Those guys came back to the court, and really, we did see what very typical All-Star game is throughout the kind of the first half or the first quarter, if you will. Man, but by the end of things, that was a brand new All-Star game that we had not seen for some time. But we'll get into it. We'll get into all that later. Ton of stuff to talk about for All-Star weekend in its totality. Hey, thanks for being here with us. My name is Rick Butler, joined to my left by Brandon Orrick, joined to my right by Chance Collins. Want to go back to Saturday afternoon and start the show off there this week, this morning. So Saturday afternoon comes. South Carolina wins over Tennessee by a score of 63-61. That one was on the road. A tough loss to swallow. And you were right there. I mean, we'll get into all the controversy from it. We'll get into everything from it. But, man, Tennessee loses a heartbreaker on the road pretty much because of free throws. Brandon, what was your takeaway watching this game?
Frustration. I don't know. I thought they played okay. For the most part, I thought they played a decent game and played pretty well.
Yeah.
Considering, we talked about it on Friday. I mean, you knew it was going to be a physical game. Both teams like to play defenses. Both teams like to play defense. You knew it was going to be a grinded out physical kind of game. And that's exactly what it was. Points were tough to come by. And Tennessee, I mean, you were up, what, 5 or 6 with about 3.5 to go? I mean, you kind of choked it away, for being completely honest. He had every chance to win that game.
Yeah, I think you did. And the tough part was you got good performances from, kind of depending, right? You had a great performance from John Fulkerson. And it's tough to kind of see that go out the wayside and end the way it did, because I think one of the biggest things that obviously everyone was talking about afterwards was that call. Barnes mentions it too. Barnes mentions after the game that he feels like it's a clean call. And a lot of people very upset about this over Twitter that I saw. Saw a ton of people upset. And really the conversation was, are you mad at Rick Barnes for not sticking up for his player for a little bit, right? Like, is that a situation where you say, man, just lie for your guy, right? Just lie for your player in the press conference. Just say, no, you know what? We looked at it a lot, and we didn't really necessarily see it the same way. Granted, you know, we respect the officials, and we know what they do because he wants to stay compliant with the SEC. We all know that Rick Barnes is going to be the one to go out and make a splash with the media. But do you think that he should have kind of backed his guy up a little bit more, or is this just kind of typical Rick Barnes? And maybe it got exaggerated a little bit because it was a loss towards the end of a bad season, and people are kind of trying to find any reason they can to rip on Rick Barnes, if you will.
Well, I mean, Saturday was kind of the nail in the coffin, right? We all knew that the Tennessee's chances of making the tournament were slim to none, and that door kind of got slammed shut on Saturday whenever you lost to South Carolina. So season's basically over at this point. You're not going to make the tournament. I guess NIT hopes are still alive. But, I mean, I don't have a huge problem with it. Yeah, maybe take up for your guy just a little bit, but I don't know. You've not really seen Barnes do that all that much.
Right.
And I'm not saying that he doesn't take up for his guys, but
He kind of just calls it like he sees, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think his biggest concern is to, you know, kind of, for lack of a better word, pump sunshine into John Fulkerson and tell him that he believed that a charge was coming his way. You're right. Like, we've even seen former players last year kind of have comments, and I remember Admirals might have gotten taken out of context a little bit the wrong way, you know, but kind of just saying, man, like, I wish, you know, it's good to see other coaches so colorful or so bold when talking about their guys, especially to officials. I'm with you, though. You're kind of right. Like, we've never really seen Rick Barnes do that. That's never really been his style. So I don't really think you knock on him for it now. What do you actually think of that call, though?
I mean, it was close, and I mean, the block charge call is one that, I mean, there's all kinds of debate on it every single year, and I thought they made some new rule or a point of emphasis, something this year about the flop, But I don't know if you. I mean, if you'll remember the game up here, very similar, similar.
With Fulkerson as well,
yeah. The Fulkerson drawing the charge, and that one was a close game as well. And basically, it just broke the other way for this one. I don't know. I mean, obviously, me personally, I'm going to say, yeah, I thought it was a block. I thought he flopped, but Tennessee should have never been in that position. I mean, like you said earlier, if you hit your free throws, if you don't turn the ball over as much, that the one possession, I guess it was the possession after the block, or maybe before. I can't. It was whatever possession it was where Jordan Bowden has the ball at the top of the key and is just wasting clock.
Yes.
I can't remember if that was before or after the block call or the charge. But because he throws it to Vescovi, and then Vescovi drives and loses the ball, turns it over. So I guess it would have been before that. But Bowden wasted too much time. Just wasted too much time standing up there dribbling. And then by the time he started to make a move, there was only like 10 seconds left. Gave you no time to do anything. You ended up turning the ball over. There were multiple things that Tennessee could have done differently to win that game.
I think so, too. Interesting box score from Tennessee over the game versus South Carolina. Fulkerson goes 8 for 12 from the field. 9 of 14 from the charity stripe for a total of 25 points. Also gets 9 rebounds, so only one shy of a double-double. Eve Pons tallies 13 points, 7 rebounds on the night for himself. Jalen Johnson got the start but only played 13 minutes, had 0 points. Josiah Jordan James, he comes back from injury, plays a total of 30 minutes, goes 3 of 8 from the court, 2 of 3 from three-pointers. Or from three-point range, ends up with 9 points on the day. But really kind of a different game than we've seen from Tennessee. In fact, a much different game from Tennessee just from the box score point of view. Typically, this is a team where you'll see a very balanced effort throughout the game. Maybe 4 to 3 to 5 guys in the 8 to 13 range. And today, you really didn't see that. You had 2 guys in double figures and then 4 guys score other than that. So, again, I still think that lack of scoring is a huge problem for Tennessee. Fulkerson had an amazing game. Just came to play, right? There's no doubt about it. Pond certainly helped him out where he could. But other than that, it's a tough game. Very tough game from Bowden. He goes 1 of 7 from the floor, 0 of 3 from three-point range. Only tallies 5 points. Just kind of another game in the line of what we've seen from Tennessee this season. Just tough games, hard-fought games, but just you weren't able to muster everything out you could to win the game in the end.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina really had no answer for John Fulkerson besides Cozart. Cozart was the only guy that could guard Fulkerson.
Yeah.
Everybody else, he was just doing whatever he wanted to. Drawing fouls, scoring. They had no answer. And went to him a little bit. I mean, I don't know. You were texting me during the end of the game, and it was who's going to take the last shot?
Yeah, it was.
And it's been the question that we've had all year long in situations like this since Lamonte Turner went out. And they go to Fulkerson and doesn't pan out.
Yeah, that was interesting because I am now remembering that. I'm going back and I'm looking through our texts. That was wild. Who did you think was going to take it? Because I thought it was going to be Vescovi or Fulkerson. I really did, and I was happy they went down to Folk. I thought the play ultimately, I thought it was a flop. I thought it was clean, but I was also not surprised they call it. What I was really surprised on was why we didn't get any kind of replays or anything like that for an extended amount of time afterwards. what the kind of announcers were doing, because it just seemed like they were fumbling around the subject. It felt like this should have been a bigger moment than what it was. But then also, you know, nobody wants to see this thing come down to a foul anyways, right? It's one of those kind of situations. But it was interesting. Who's going to take that final shot?
Yeah, I don't know. I was surprised that they just kind of went on without even looking at a replay or anything like that. I thought they'd at least take maybe a look at it or something, but they didn't. And that, like I said, that basically does it for this season. And I mean, it's okay. I mean, you still got games to play, but still got to show a little bit of fight.
And I think they will. We'll for sure go over what the rest of the season looks like for Tennessee, kind of as they are approaching their remaining games on the schedule. It's coming down to the wire. It's coming down to the final stretch for the Basket Vols. And we'll certainly continue talking about that all throughout the show today, all throughout the show this week, about what the future holds for this Tennessee basketball team. Other than that, though, man, we got a good show ahead. I think I'm a little bit anxious right now. Like, I feel a little bit high strung because I guess I missed a couple days last week. It's good to be back in the chair. We'll take a reset right here, come back on the other side, maybe touch a little bit more into Tennessee basketball, but want to talk about this All-Star weekend. Man, it was something. We'll talk about the All-Star game coming up next right here on the Blitz. All right, 10:21 back here on the Blitz. Rick, Brandon, and Chance hanging out with you as we continue on with the show today. 865-546-8200. That is your number to call into the show in case you want to get in, you want to talk a little Tennessee basketball, maybe Rick Barnes. Look, a lot of people are big mad about Rick Barnes. That's just kind of the vibe on the internet right now. Is that what you're seeing?
I saw some of that.
I saw a lot of it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Should they be?
Is that the key question?
Should there be animosity toward Rick Barnes?
Should there be controversy into his coaching tenure at Tennessee?
I don't think so. I mean, does this year suck? Yeah. Is he being overpaid for right now for what's being put on the floor right now? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the guy inherited a complete and total dumpster fire. In 2 years, turned that into a team that won a conference regular season championship, made it to the NCAA Sweet 16, made it to the Sweet 16 2 years in a row. You didn't make it the first year, did you? No.
No.
No, sorry. Excuse me. Round of 32, then Sweet 16. He's put two, three guys in the NBA. And I mean, yeah, this year's a down year, but next year you should be absolutely loaded. You should be loaded next year.
Yeah, I agree. I'm nervous that we're at the point in the season, right, where we knew that this team was likely going to be a bubble team. And what are we right now? We are a bubble team. We're talking about
our bubble pop.
Okay, but we've been kind of this bubble team, right? At the very least, we've been in the bubble conversation on the final stretch of games. There's only five games left in the before conference tournament right now. So at the very least, I mean, let's remember, 1 week ago you were part of the last four in from CBS Sports. And on ESPN and Bleacher Report, you were only a couple of first four out. And that was before beating Arkansas. So this was still a team that was on the bubble. And look, this is where we all expected us to be. So to me, I'm not understanding the backlash against Barnes, right? This is what this season has gone. And yes, there's been its ups and it's had its downs for sure. There's been times where it's felt like Barnes... he's not coaching anywhere close to what he normally is. Maybe normal is just not great, depending on who you ask, though. Let's head over to the fan-run phone lines. I think that Phil will have a key opinion on this. Phil, how much is Rick Barnes to blame for just basically what's happened this season so far. You're sitting here 14-11, five games left in the season. How much is Rick Barnes to blame?
What do you say, Fabulous?
How you doing? Good to hear
See
from
you. Back in the saddle again, huh?
Hey, it's good to be back. Six
you,
games
you
left.
You left Chance and Brandon Hyndry, didn't you?
That's not true. I knew they had some heavy hitters coming in on Thursday and Friday. I knew they'd be – they don't need me. If there's one thing
you?
I know,
really?
It's that Chance –
You don't admit that? Well, that's pretty bad.
They don't need me to put on great radio. That's just the kind of show we got right here. They put on phenomenal radio all weekend long.
Oh, that's beautiful. It's almost as good as Tennessee's performance Saturday night, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. My joke being compared to Tennessee basketball, I don't really know how to take it.
Well, all in honesty, guys, the bottom line, Rick Barnes, yeah, he's making $5 million a year. Tennessee should expect to go to the NCAA tournament 8 out of 10 years once you go to the program rebuilt. And last year, they got caught with their pants down. They didn't recruit for 2 years. And then you look at it, they didn't expect Bone and Grant Williams to go to the NBA early, which they did. And then everything that went wrong could go wrong is happening to them. So they didn't get Jalen Cohn. They didn't get Blackshear. And the stiffs they brought in the last couple of recruiting classes can't play. And –
Yeah,
they got lucky. They got Viscovi. If Viscovi is not over there, we don't even have a SEC win.
I think we beat Vandy.
Yeah, they would have beaten Vandy.
Yeah, I think we beat Vandy, but past that, I think it might be a stretch. But no, I don't know, Phil. If we had kept DJ Burns or Derek Walker. I mean, I surely to goodness those guys are better than Plavsic. Plavsic is terrible.
He is so bad.
Do you remember Derek Reese, Phil?
Oh, Derek Reese is better now.
No, yeah, I would take Derek Reese 10 times out of 10 if you line the two and you told me I had to make a choice.
Well, he is 7 foot and he's got 3 more years, so maybe they can develop him into a decent player. I don't know. The only time will tell. What Biggs did when his Camel has not really done much. And I thought he would be a major contributor, and he's been very up and down at the least.
He's very flashy. He shows flashes of great moments, of really great potential. Just got to figure out how to string those together more often. You can't go 2 games with 0 points, 1 game with 10 points looking really good, and then back to having 0 points. It's tough. But then again, still a freshman.
Yeah, but we can rip our front court all you want to. There are back courts is where we're losing. I mean, Bowden not showing up. You know, you got Jalen Johnson. He starts and he don't produce anything. Fiscovi's been a pleasant surprise for him. And Josiah James has played okay. But we need some immediate infusion of talent at the guard position, and that's what they're going to have next year.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think so too, Phil. And
what was that? And it's all around. I mean, they need help at the guard position, but they also need help, you know, on the block and somebody down low that can body some players and get some rebounds and score easy buckets. I mean, Fulkerson, he's done a great job this year, but he's overachieved somewhat, and it's still kind of mucking it up when it comes to him and a little helter skelter. But like, I mean, if they had another presence down low outside of him and somebody, I mean, they got Pons, but. He's inconsistent. They just have the consistency all around. Their problem is consistency from top to bottom, whether that's coaching game to game, although Barnes, you know, he's still a great developer and he's still in-game coach great. I mean, he missed on this recruiting class that you see out there now, but they still got to get better just, you know, guard play, not turning the ball over. Somebody in the block that's going to be aggressive. It's going to be like, you know, a junkyard dog, like kind of like teams in the past, big guys in the past that Tennessee's had come through here. They don't have anybody with that type of aggression or that type of bite. Nobody with a chip on their shoulder. Nobody who's
Didn't they turn the ball 4 times in the last 2 minutes? That's where they lost the game. I mean, they had 20 turnovers on the road. You don't win close games like that.
They continue to turn the ball over.
And it's
you can't turn the ball over like that when you have a problem scoring. It's one thing to have a lot of turnovers if you're a team that can score quick and score a lot, but you have a problem scoring, so you can't continue to just give the ball away.
Those possessions are that much more valuable.
Yeah, and Pons choked away a foul, two foul shots. So right there, that was the game. If he whistles two fouls, I think Tennessee wins by 5-6 points. But he didn't. He missed them, and they went down and hit a shot. And, you know, going right on the buzzer. So, I don't know. It's frustrating. How are we going to get a big man chance? We'll have to process somebody to get one. They don't have any scholarships.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're in a tough position. And you keep missing on, like you say, these guys you bring it in kind of – just some bodies, Plazic, you know, maybe he gets better. I don't know, but not looking.
Bamber, I don't know if is he a two-year development project?
Drew Pember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like him, but, I mean, we don't have 2 years to wait.
No, he's just got it.
No, I think he gets lost in the depth chart next season, unless he just has a big turn in the offseason.
Or redshirt him.
Yeah, if he puts on some weight or something, he just has a hell of an offseason and Rick Barnes able to, you know, really develop him, he's going to get lost in the depth chart.
Well, it's bad because the SEC is really not that good this year and we're not going to the tournament. That's kind of, you know, we lost to Texas A&M, which you never lost to them. We should never lost to George, even though Anthony Edwards scored about 40 on us. But they're a horrible team. We've got, you know, those two losses right there, you'd be right on the bubble.
Yeah.
If you didn't win those two games.
Yeah, those two losses killed you.
I think if you got Turner, you probably won 2 out of 3 of those games.
Yeah, I agree. Turner was a big loss. I mean,
yeah, it really was. I mean, somebody who's not afraid to take big shots.
Yeah, and you
can't
know,
get hot, can't handle the ball. His assist turnover ratio was through the roof at the beginning of the season. He was leading the SEC in assists.
When he left, I remember it was in a little bit of a cold streak, and obviously we know why, and it was because of the injury, no doubt about it, but I think that maybe – at least for myself, maybe that tampered how much I really expected us to miss him. Part of me was just like, well, you know, maybe this wasn't his year anyways. No, that's totally out the window. You miss that guy with that kind of mentality at the end of the games. It would have been really nice to have for a game like this on Saturday.
Maybe a few to follow. I'll get off here. What's going to be worse, Bowden's last year at Tennessee or number two's last fall at Tennessee coming up? Can you see the parallel there while I'm trying to cook up right there? See?
Well, 2020 vision, I can see it.
I think JG has a lot more talent around him to help him out than Bowden. I'll say that.
It's a good point.
No, it does.
I think he's got immensely and just so much more talent to help him out than Jordan Bowden did his senior season.
We certainly got some number two to talk about today. Talk about Jared Garantano, big announcement over the weekend. We'll see how we're all feeling in here about. I know that again. The internet says one thing. We'll see what we say here. Coming up next, right after the Blitz. All right, back here on the Blitz, 10:36 a.m., recapping a little Tennessee basketball to start off the show today. Tough loss to South Carolina on the road. This past weekend, maybe the dagger in the coffin for Tennessee's tournament hopes. I think that most people have kind of tampered their expectations away from that a little bit. We'll continue talking what's coming next for this Tennessee basketball team in the future. How much blame do you give Rick Barnes? So on and so forth. That will be still to come later in the show. But guys, I want to talk about last night. Because last night... was a little unexpected for me, because let me just backtrack a little bit. So Team LeBron, Team Giannis, NBA All-Star Game live from Chicago. So much to talk about here for this All-Star Game alone, from the opening, right? From the history of Chicago and how basketball factors in, from the beautiful and the moving and the heartwarming tribute they had for Kobe Bryant at the beginning, from the player introductions with Common kind of doing the spoken word around that, and then to have the game. I mean, it really was a spectacle last night. And I think first and foremost, NBA does it just so much better than everyone else. MLB has a great All-Star weekend, but most people really only care about what the home run derby, pretty much. Like, that's really the only reason to tune in.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw it last year with, who was it? It was Jock Peterson and Vlad Guerrero Jr., right? Just lighting up the sports world, but how many people really cared about the, what?
Whoa! Just total disrespect for my guy.
Oh, Pete Alonso.
The winner.
Yeah, I forgot about Pete Alonso.
The guy that won the whole damn thing.
Yeah, but doesn't that kind of tell you something, right?
Nobody likes him.
The battle was battle was Jock Peterson, and it was Vladdy Jr.
And you know what?
Yeah,
they're
was
both
much better.
Losers.
Well, whatever.
Losers.
So is
we'll find out Pete Alonso was cheating one day. He's on the Royals.
Oh, I don't care.
You're
but either way,
all Coster.
Either way, right? MLB.
Hell yeah.
Hey. Well, are you an Astro?
Yeah, he is. You want to be in that group?
You want to be in the Astros group? Old Carlos Beltran?
Because they're going to get hit a lot this year.
Yes.
Rob
wow.
Rob
really?
Manfred says he's not taking any of that.
Talk about
Rob
there
Manfred
won't be
is a dumbass.
Any of that.
Rob yeah. Manfred, one of the
is that what he said?
Dumbest
he will not,
no retaliation
he will not
versus
stand
the Astros.
For any,
yeah.
any retaliation yeah. against the Astros.
Like their bumbling idiot
what
owner who
joke.
Got up there and. So would you say that sign stealing is definitely an advantage to the game? Well, it could be, and it could not be.
I don't think it had that much impact.
Yeah.
And then you have, who was it? I think it was Carlos Correa talking about Altuve. You know, he didn't want to take his shirt off because he had a bad tattoo. And you know what? The thing was ugly. Let me tell you guys, I'm his friend, but it was a bad tattoo, man. Like, that's going to help his case.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ratting
up,
on
Carlos
his friend
Correa.
For a bad tattoo is going to make it more believable, more justifiable. Get the hell out of here.
Cody Bellinger put him in a body bag.
He did. He did. We are all Cody Bellinger fans in this moment. But anyways, all that goes to say that the NBA does their All-Star game right. Chance, I'm sure you got a chance to watch this this in its entirety yesterday. Is that true?
Yeah, I watched the game.
What did you kind of make of it? The new rules, the Elam ending,
Elam?
The end of the Elam.
Yeah, Elam ending. I liked it a lot, but I was excited about the new format going into it. I knew that when you placed, you know, an actual number to reach outside of just them playing for 12 minutes a quarter there at the end, it was going to make it much more exciting. I mean, players talked about Anthony Davis afterward, talked about it felt like a playoff game. I mean, I thought the guys were about to get a technical foul late in the fourth quarter, the way they were, you know, going
right.
at the refs. I mean, seriously, it was a very amped up ending. And each quarter, I liked the fact that they just, you know, you win the quarters. I liked that. They give the money to the charity. And then, you know, they take the cumulative score, and then they add 24 at the end, and they played for, you know, it was to 157 was the target score.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's something that they can incorporate for all NBA games or playoff games or, you know, if it would ever be across the board, college basketball or anything like that. But that Elam ending that we saw, it get first introduced in the basketball tournament, that's a tournament over the summer, past NBA players and, like, former college standouts get in, play for, like, was it $2 million? They started using that there, and it was created by this professor. I like it. It is – it's at first it sounded weird for a lot of people who didn't know anything about it, but it makes sense. When you get to the end of the game, you get late – you get one team who's down trying to foul the other team, trying to, you know, extend the game, trying to make them miss free throws or whatnot. But it really just extends the game, and you get sloppier basketball at the end. Well, if this guy's had to play – at a certain level because you're playing to a target score.
I think it works for a scenario like you had last night. I don't think you could ever put it in a game and it work.
But
you work at a high level like where you're playing
well,
for championship.
Well, but here's the thing.
What about an overtime?
But we say it couldn't be put there, but that's only because you haven't seen it in a regular game and people don't like change. But in reality, it is actually better for basketball because you're not getting a bunch of fouls that extends the game and you get sloppy play at the end of the game.
But just like that game last night, it ended with a free throw. It ended on the free throw line.
But that's
sometimes that's just basketball.
I was gonna say, like, I don't even know if that's gonna happen every time, but that's
where you have the fouls at the end.
Sure.
But it is basketball because that's the way of it right now, is what I'm saying. Like the guy, whenever he came up with it, when we talked about it last week when Rick was out, because I found the article on it. He was sitting around with some friends watching college basketball, and he's talking about how at the end of the game it's just so tough to watch because one team, if they're down, you know, 6-7 points, whatever. It's just free throws, and then 30 seconds becomes 2 minutes, and you just get a bunch of, you know, fouls and, like, you know, bad passes, turnovers, trying to break presses or whatnot, and it just makes it sloppy. So in this case, there's a sense of anticipation because everybody knows what the score, and you're not playing on a time limit. You're playing to a score, so the team that's down, you get a couple defensive stops, you're still in this game because you're playing. You're not playing to beat the clock.
Well, and I think it's that the theory of wanting intentional fouling to have consequences, right? Ultimately, intentional fouling doesn't really have any consequences because you're obviously, like, if you're in foul trouble, you're not going to be the one intentionally fouling typically, right? But they want that to have consequences. Here's my thing. To me, it'd be a really interesting thing for a fourth quarter of a game because we've seen fourth quarters range anywhere from points in the 30s to the 50s, right? And maybe even a couple times a year, you see it in the 60s. So if you basically take the fourth quarter and you just say, you know, hey, first to 25 points wins, or, you know, we're going to add 25 to this target score, and that's going to be the winning number, maybe it kind of stifles some of the electricity that a crazy fourth quarter can build. But then again, it would also add in plenty of its own crazy moments from comebacks trying to get to that target number. Here's my thing about yesterday in its entirety. The first three quarters, at least for me, stunk. Couldn't have cared less about the first three quarters. Yes, it was cool seeing all those guys out there. You obviously had some crazy dunks. You had some great moments in the game. Charity's going crazy whenever Team LeBron or Team Giannis won. That's awesome. And even the end of the third quarter got a little bit good. But for the most part, I couldn't. It wasn't for me. That kind of basketball is not for me. Just either dunks or three-point attempts, right? With just not a lot of defense being played. The first three quarters did not matter to me in the slightest. It's just the fourth quarter. That fourth quarter where it was 33-22, where you got to the final score of 157-155, because that's when the players actually started playing, right? There was great reaction all across the league yesterday from this All-Star format, but let's not act like people were going crazy about the first quarter, right? That everyone was super excited. I think that's just a totally individual opinion thing, whether you like the individual quarters resetting. And if you do, great. If you don't, great. Whatever. That doesn't matter to me. But I, at least, for myself, the first three quarters of the game, couldn't find myself figuring out how to pay attention to it. But man, once that fourth quarter struck, I was glued to it. I mean, it was must-see television. It was like getting a taste of a playoff game with literally the best basketball players in the world, which is something that we've always asked for from an All-Star game. From an All-Star contest from any sport, we want to see what it looks like when the best players go up against each other at their top level.
Yeah, I mean, but with the All-Star game, you say the first three quarters, it's been like that for a little bit.
And it has.
Yeah, like the players, they'll tell
you. I'm
not
surprised.
They've talked about in previous years that they don't really start playing until the end because they still want to beat their opposing, you know, opponents, but they don't really start getting into it.
For sure.
Until the end of the game. So, yeah, but I liked the ending. I thought the All-Star game was nice. And a nice tribute to Kobe. Both teams, you know, LeBron is wearing 2 for his daughter. Then Team Giannis wearing 24. Thought the Rising Stars Challenge on Friday night, the World versus the United States rookie and first-year players going at it, that was really exciting. A lot of highlights there. Zion looked good. Ja Morant. Three-point contest was nice. Hated my guy Zach LaVine. He put up 23 in the first round, but those other guys just put up, like, was Devin Booker and Bertrands, and also Buddy Hield just went lights out. Slam dunk contest. That's the one to talk about.
Yeah, slam dunk contest was really, if you want to pull a conversation from that weekend, kind of besides the All-Star game festivities itself, that is the conversation you want to have, and that is the conversation we will have next right here on the Blitz, closing out hour number one. So the slam dunk contest typically does not have as much controversy as I think it had this year. People accusing Dwayne Wade of rigging the whole thing, of biased nature. Wow, didn't matter to me. We had quite the slam dunk contest on Saturday night. Aaron Gordon and Derrick Jones Jr. putting on a show. Brandon, did you watch this dunk contest? Did you get to see the whole thing unfold?
I did.
Who was your winner?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I thought they should have kept dunking until one of them missed. That's how I thought it should have ended. I had no problem with Derrick Jones Jr. winning. I had no problem. I thought he performed outstandingly. I thought it was great. He had some great dunks.
Yeah, he did.
And you know, maybe he should have beat Aaron Gordon. I just didn't like the way that it happened.
Well, you're right, because that's the thing, right? There were so many amazing dunks. I think some of the bet, like the reversed windmill off the side of the basket. From Aaron Gordon, the dunking over 7'5" tackle fall. Like, there were so many great dunks in it. Here's the issue: if you want these players to treat it seriously, right? Like we always say, man, I want in my dunk contest, I want LeBron and I want Anthony Davis and I want Giannis, and that's ultimately what we want. But still, for these guys like Zach LaVine, like your Aaron Gordons, you want them to go out and ball out to give everything they have on the line for these dunks? Well, then give them a little bit something better than Common, Dwayne Wade, Candace Parker, Chadwick Boseman, and Scottie Pippen as your judges. Right? That's kind of my thing. Is like we all have problem with the judging, and that was kind of it. Like that was the sour moment. And it stinks that the judging soured out the whole dunk contest, because I think for a lot of people it certainly did, or at least for the rest of the night on Twitter it did. And so for me it's like, well, you know, certainly three people who are very close with, three former basketball players and then two just entertainment icons. If you want it, I think, in its legitimacy, because you watched Aaron Gordon after the thing, like Aaron Gordon was ticked, and he was rightfully so ticked. And so I think if you want to add the legitimacy to it, you got to give them legitimate judges. Maybe it's finally time to have a something that's not just like, well, let's find five popular people and we'll have them judge it. Or else you're going to see guys like Aaron Gordon start to take this a lot less seriously, because what's the point? I mean, they're going out there, they're trying to win this competition legitimately.
Well, I mean, he's already said that he's done.
Yeah, he's done. And good for him. Good for him. If you get robbed twice, you should be done, because it's a stupid thing that, you know, if the judging is how they put it out, then I don't think they're taking it that seriously. It's more for the show, not actually to find a dunking champion, which is, I think, what a guy like Aaron Gordon probably really wanted to be. Am I looking too much into it?
I don't know. Where all the judges were tied to Chicago, correct? Is that,
yes,
is that right? So I mean, I get that part of it, and give it a little
but
hometown.
But what qualifies them to be a judge?
What do you want? Like some analysts back there, like judging it? Like,
well,
I
would want like the NBA TNT crew. I would want maybe like a fan voting, something just besides like, hey, let's take five random people.
Fan voting would be cool, and I've thought about that, but then it would take so much longer to get the results in.
What about just like the NBA on TNT panel? Like, it just something besides like a guy who is former teammates with one of the contestants.
But in the
right?
years past, it's been like Julius Erving and Shaq and players.
Well,
and
see,
Charles
that's how I think they should do it.
Kenny Smith has been a judge most years. Like, this is the first time I've seen it where it wasn't like Kenny Smith and like Dr. J and other.
But also, this is the only year where there's like, this is the conversation coming out of the dunk contest is about the judges and about how the judges did it, right?
Well,
I agree, because normally when they do have guys like Kenny and Kevin Harlan, stuff like that, they typically do get it right. Nobody really ever has an issue with the judges. The year that they bring in Common, Chadwick Boseman, you know, Dwayne Wade, who was teammates with one of the contestants, that's when you see the issues.
Well, I mean, I don't think that they thought that it was going to be controversial like this. But
no,
well,
clearly
it was supposed to be a tie, Common said, and Wade went rogue.
So it was supposed to be a tie.
They're both,
which
supposed
I would
to
have been completely fine with. I mean, he jumped over Taco Fall. How is that not at least a 48?
Yeah.
He jumped over a 7'5" man. I don't care if he barely caught him at the end. He's 7'5".
That's a big taco.
It is.